The thing about temptation is that for all of us, for every single person here, it's not theoretical. Would you agree? We all have experience with this. You know, sometimes you apply for a job and it asks for a particular kind of experience. You say, oh, I can't apply for that. I don't have experience in that area. We can't say that about temptation. In fact, you and I are not only experienced in temptation, but we are pretty consistent in many ways giving into it. It may be in that sense that we're a little bit like Oscar Wilde. Oscar Wilde said the best way to deal with temptation is to give into it. I never met a temptation I didn't want to succumb to. I don't know. Maybe that's not your situation or mine. But temptation is not theoretical. It is very experiential. It is something we have an acquaintance with. The challenge is to understand how to host temptation, how to welcome temptation, how to learn from temptation, and what may be actually going on in temptation. It's very interesting that the word that is used in Greek for the temptation of Jesus here, one has to use the context to decide what it really is. Which one is it? Testing or tempting? Because the word means both, and the context helps us to decide. And there are several scholars that wax very eloquently on which one it is. My preference, given my vast experience with temptation, is that we need not choose. Because you see, testing and temptation cohere, I believe, to instruct and to inform and to illumine and to transform. Testing, as we have learned over the pages of Scripture, is a way in which we understand God seeking to have us, not for God's benefit, but us, discern and discover whether or not we love God, love the ways of God, are being honest about our intention and our commitment to those ways. So the testing is an invitation to authenticity, to truth. Often temptation, or those who tempt, are seeking and hoping perhaps that we will fail. So James, the book of James, tells us it's not God who tempts us, but we are tempted. We are tempted by that which we are capable of doing. You and I are not tempted by the things that we can't do. Think about it. In order for it to be an authentic, truthful temptation, we must have the agency, we must have the capacity to actually do it, to choose it. And I don't know about you, but my experience with temptation is not based on a lack of knowledge. I know good and well what is right and wrong in most circumstances. I know what is good and bad in most circumstances. So when I am tempted and I give into that temptation, it isn't a lack of knowledge. It is that my will has been co-opted and I have chosen to do it. When we tell ourselves the truth about that, we learn something about ourselves. And so when we come to this text, we are invited not to try to protect Jesus and to say, well, you know, Jesus has just been confirmed as the Son of God, my beloved, and so forth. So it was for him, it was just a pretend thing. He wasn't really being tempted. I don't buy that for one moment at all. I believe that this driving into the wilderness, for the text is very clear. Jesus has just been confirmed in this experience, this spiritual deep confirmation of identity and purpose and mission in the baptism of John. Behold my beloved Son, whom I love, the one that I love, the one I've chosen, the one in whom I am well pleased. And the very next verse, with urgency, Mark says, and the Spirit, that same Spirit that comes and confirms this identity, drives him out. The word is so, it's almost violent. Drags him, kicks him into the wilderness. theologically, what is that about? Might I suggest that it has to do with the deep eternal wisdom of God that knows that for us to live out our full humanity, we sometimes have to be taken, driven, cast, kicking and screaming into the wilderness. And historically within the Jewish tradition, the wilderness represents, as it did for the prophets and others, that place where we strip away all the illusions and the pretensions of goodness, the pretensions of correctness, the pretensions of faithfulness, and we expose idolatry, we expose the way in which we tell ourselves lies and believe illusions. So the wilderness is that venue, that space, that invitation to truthfulness, to an honest look in the mirror of our soul and our motives and our lives and our faith or lack thereof. It's very interesting that when the church was made the official religion of the Roman Empire in the 4th century, that soon after the number one temptation of the institutional church seemed to be corruption and siding up too close with power. And it is not an accident that at the same time, simultaneously almost, as the church grew in its protection of that power and its interests, that there was also the development and expansion of the ascetic movement or the monastic movement. The reason being is that in the monastic understanding of the faith, there is a commitment to the wilderness. There's a commitment to go to that place where you are stripped of all upon which you depend for your own self-sufficiency and turn to rely on God. It is not an accident. And I believe that what we are seeing in Jesus being driven into the wilderness is that there he must contend and decide for himself whether this mission that has been conferred upon him, this way in which he is going to inaugurate the kingdom, this way in which he's going to demonstrate how God has come near and the will and reign of God is close to us and involved in the world, the way in which that is going to be done is going to be through the cross and through suffering. Are you up for it, Jesus? Because there are easier ways to go, but not authentic. So Jesus is driven into the space and that venue where he must decide and wrestle with how he will live out his mission and his identity. Just as you and I are also. Rowan Williams, Archbishop of Canterbury, has written some interesting Lenten devotions and reflections. And one of them invites us to ask ourselves, in this time of Lent, why would we want to throw off or put aside the easier burden of self-critique in favor of the weightier burden of self-justification? Let me explain. A commentary on his devotion reads like this: self-justification is the heavy burden because there is no end to carrying it. There will always be some new situation where we need to establish our position, dig the trench for the ego to defend. But how on earth can we say that self-critique is a light burden? In contrast, we have to remember the fundamental principle of letting go of our fear. Self-critique, honesty about our failings, is a light burden because whatever we have to face in ourselves, however painful is the recognition, however hard it is to feel at times that we have to start all over again, we know that the burden is already known and accepted by God's mercy. It is in the brokenness, in the weakness, that we find ourselves open to the ministration of God's angels, of God's grace. Think about it. How is it that the earth is nurtured with what is necessary as the fundamental nutrient for its growth and its generativity? How is it that that is possible? Only insofar as the earth remains porous, that there are cracks in the hardened earth to allow what is necessary as water, baptismal water, creation's water, covenantal water, to bring to life in it and in us what is necessary. If we are tight, if we hermetically seal our lives, not willing to admit or to look or to walk those treacherous paths of self-confession and critique, hardening ourselves from the very grace that will loosen our grip on illusion, we will be spiritually unwell. So Jesus models for us what it might mean for us to wrestle in that space of truth-telling, what it might mean for us to trust God deeply. So I want to ask just to pause in quiet reflection and ask each of us, how honest do we feel we can be with ourselves, with God, about our thoughts, our dreams, our longings, our griefs, our anger, and our shame? How honest can we be? Let's take a few moments and reflect on that. Last week, just last Saturday, many in the world watch an incredible funeral service to the famous and well-known and yet well-plagued with human frailty personage of Whitney Houston. There are incredible moments of beauty and great testimony to the faithfulness of God in that service. There were many eulogists, and one of them disclosed something that I think may reach very near to our hearts and our lives and experience. Kevin Costner, the co-star of Whitney in that famous film Bodyguard, some of you may have seen it, really brought her to the light in the cinematographic world. She was known for her voice, but to see her in the dramatic role. And Kevin maintained a lifelong friendship with Whitney, and he shared at the funeral in his eulogy that Whitney was plagued with a constant deficit, as it were, a constant question. And it had to do with her worth. She always asked, am I good enough? Will my fans like me? Is my voice still what it was? Am I good enough deep inside? Deep down, am I good enough? Am I pretty enough? Am I talented enough? A woman that knew great favor of the world, set a record for singles, the number one singles, struggled every day with this question, am I good enough? One of the things that struck me is that Whitney began singing in that New Hope Baptist Church in Newark, New Jersey, when she was a little child, singing gospel songs, singing of the mercy of God, singing of the victory of God, singing of the love of God and the transformation of God. That's how she began. Her career was launched and she went on to great things, we know. But some of you may have heard that the very last song that Whitney sang in public, in her broken, faded voice, besieged by the effects of alcohol and drug abuse that had taken its toll,
the very last song she sang the night before she died. An impromptu performance up on stage. And it was, Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so. Little ones to Him belong. They are weak, but He is strong. I like to believe that the Spirit of God had never left her in the wilderness of her torment. I like to believe that somehow she came home to that assurance, that somehow her soul might have been crying out to be affirmed in that insecurity. I choose to believe that the same God who ministered to Jesus through the angels in the wilderness ministers to you and to me. Both in our denial and our self-justification, as well as our vulnerability. Except we do better as a community and as individuals if we open ourselves. Open ourselves vulnerably in this journey of Lent to God's affirmation that, yes, you are my beloved. So for the discipline of Lent, I want to close with these four suggestions. They came to me as I was celebrating the communion service this week at Carlingview Manor, looking at those who were gathered, varying capacities and levels of consciousness. And as I was repeating those familiar words, it came to me that they may be indeed a form that we may assume each day throughout the season of Lent. So I offer them to you. They're the words we use at communion. Jesus took the bread. Prefer the word chosen. So you and I are chosen. Every day, remind yourself of your chosenness. God has chosen to love you. God has chosen to offer you grace. Every day, chosen. And He blessed the bread. God has chosen to bless you every day. Blessing, another word for blessing is benediction. Benediction from the Latin, two words, bene diction, bene good, diction to say or saying of. Every day, God speaks goodness into your life. God speaks well-being into your life. So you are chosen. You are benedicted. But you and I are also broken. And He took bread and He blessed it and He broke it. You and I are broken, and often that brokenness comes because of fractured relationships, of deep pain that we have suffered at the hands of others or sometimes ourselves. Yes, we are broken. Don't deny it. Don't try to get over it too quickly. Offer it to God in the context of that blessing and that chosenness. Let the cracks that have come in our lives and our experience be fully opened to the pouring out of God's grace. He took the bread, He blessed it and He broke it, and He gave it. Giving. You and I are created for giving. Give yourselves. This Lent, let us give ourselves to God fully. Let us give ourselves to the need and the brokenness in the world and to those that we are privileged to meet. Chosen, blessed, broken, yes, but available by God's grace to give.